Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and drydown data, is at AgriGold.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for August 8, 2014. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzalo of Global Commodity Analytics in Atchison, Kansas. In agricultural news, Argentina is suing the U.S. in the International Court of Justice over a debt dispute. We'll have that in other stories. Also this half hour, University of Illinois researchers have been digging through the 2012 Census of Agriculture. Todd Gleason reports on some of the findings. And Illinois State climatologist Jim Angel will give us a recap of growing conditions. It's all on the Friday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC, providing nationwide land auctions, farmland sales and management, and financial advice for agribusiness. Information on upcoming land auctions and offerings can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
Here's how futures settled on this Friday afternoon. Hard red winter, September wheat, 629 and a quarter down 17. December settled at 642 and three quarters down 17. September soft wheat settled at 549 and a quarter down 12 and a quarter. December 566 down 13. September corn settled at 351 and three quarters down 7 and three quarters. December 363 and a half down 7 and three quarters. March 376 and a half down 7 and three quarters. July 391 and a half down 7 and three quarters. August soybean settled at 1284 and three quarters, up 34 and three quarters. September 1113 and three quarters, up 14 and a half. November 1084 and three quarters, up 6 and three quarters. August soybean meal settled at 397.50, up 690. August soybean oil settled at 3544, down 18. August live cattle, the settlement 152.55, down $3. August feeders, 215.32 and a half, also down $3. And August lean hogs, 114.10, down 112 and one half. And those are Friday's settlements from the Chicago Board of Trade.
Support for this market report comes from Country Financial, providing generations of Central Illinois farmers with crop hail insurance programs for individual producers, immediate family member, or tenant-landlord relationships. More information is available from your local Country Financial representative or at country-crop.com.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Leonard's weather highlights, he says the two-week outlook is a little wetter again for the northern Midwest, but most of the rain is still expected to be light, and drying should occur in many areas. Some crops will still need greater rain later this month to prevent more serious crop stress and declines in yields. Areas from eastern North Dakota to east central South Dakota and Minnesota to parts of northern Iowa, Michigan, and portions of northeastern Illinois will see the least rain through the next 2 weeks and will be most vulnerable to increasing levels of stress. However, a combination of occasional rounds of light rain, favorable subsoil moisture, and seasonable to cooler than usual temperatures should limit stress to crops during the next 2 weeks. Areas from east central and northeastern South Dakota to southern Minnesota and parts of north central Iowa have the driest soil and should be the first to see increasing levels of stress if rain does not increase soon. The remainder of the Midwest will see greater rain during the next 2 weeks than the northern areas already mentioned. High temperatures through Tuesday will be in the upper 70s to the middle 80s, with some upper 80s and a few lower 90s in the south most days. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey joining us now for a look at the futures market. And we may touch on basis as well this afternoon. It's Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics, and he is in Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon, Mike. Hello, Mike. Wait a minute.
Dave.
There we are. Push one extra button, and it does work indeed. Want to begin with the soybeans, because you can't help but note that August contract just so out of line with everything else that went on today.
Yeah, and this is where it goes back to the cash versus the futures market and what's happening since the July report. I think it's interesting we go back to July 10th on the close before the last USDA report and realize that September beans were sitting at 11.21 and three quarters, and guess what? They closed within a dime of that today. But before that was able to happen, we had gone all the way down to 10.68.5 in set beans, 53 cents lower, or about 5% on a decline because of the jump in the carryover from the June report that the July report showed, Dave. And I think this is where the trade has made up its mind. And why wouldn't it do this, too, when you look at the trend of the USDA numbers in the reports of the last few months? In other words, the trade has gone back to, because of continued tight old crop cash supplies, gone back to buying beans and selling corn, favoring the bull spread, also because of the weather being more questionable. I got to say, I think that the trade, and I would not agree with this, and I've had a lot of calls from producers in northern Indiana, northern Illinois, northwestern Ohio that have said as well that this crop is not made, and they've actually lost bushels the last couple, 3 weeks. But the trade, I really think, believes the crop is made. And why wouldn't they? Because USDA, since January, in terms of total grain ending stocks, total grains meaning everything feed grain related, has essentially thrown 1.3 billion bushels extra carryover on the market in the last 7 months or 6 months. And increased us to a level that we haven't seen since 2000. So we're at a 14-year high, all the while, except for the new crop beans, all the while has been trying to straddle the idea that we're not outselling ourselves in the soybean line. So this, I think, makes sense going into the report that the trade would buy beans and sell corn and wheat again, especially with new news out of the Ukraine today.
And later on, they may find themselves surprised by other results. I think that August is the month when you either add to the corn crop or you take away from the corn crop. And I got to feel that there's been enough missed rains in enough locations that maybe the crop is getting smaller.
And I think that's a real viable point in the real world. But then you have to come back to the government report. And I went back and looked at 2004 and in 2009 in the August report versus the July report. Back in 2004, the corn carryover went up by 14% on about a 3% increase in yield. In 2009, corn carryover went up 4.5% on a yield increase of a 4% number. And that's probably more likely because the 2004 number was a very low carryover number to start with. The July report in 2004, corn was still below a billion bushels. Now, when you look at beans, it's the exact opposite. We see in 2004, bean carryover went down 10% in August on a 2% yield decline. In 2009, bean carryover went down 16% on a 2% yield decline. So here again, the trade is going with what has been a precedent, both historically based upon crop years they think this year similar to, and what USDA's done this year as well. So the trade's playing it very straight and narrow, if you ask me. And again, today, after mid-session, we saw new lows in the wheat, new highs in the stock market, because Russia's defense minister said military drills near the Ukrainian border are over. We're moving aircraft and anti-aircraft missiles back to their permanent locations. And that really hit the market quickly.
So August soybeans up on the week, 69.75. But November beans up 26.25, very respectable, caught your eye.
Yeah, it really did. And it pushed us back up there into the middle of that trading range that we've been trading between that 11.20 area, 11.15 area, and that 10.58 area. But I think you talked about basis on the intro. I think the most important feature to the trade that brought everything together today was the Decatur, Indiana, at the Bunge facility, reported by Reuters and some other news wires, jumped their bean basis to 20 over, up by 20 cents to $2.30 over the November bean price. So we're back above, well above $13 cash beans for spot bean delivery. And that is very reminiscent of where we were a month ago before that report came out that shut down the cash bullishness because of this new crop bearishness.
While we're talking about bases, let's also talk about the possibilities for corn come harvest time. Is it possible and that there are going to be quite a few quick ship benefits, perks at harvest time on ideas that old crop corn is not going to get you there and new crop corn is not going to be harvested because it's just too wet and producers are not going to be too enthused with 40-cent dry down costs?
Yeah, I'm starting to hear more from producers that they are dealing with more of a normal crop, not a rapidly advancing crop, especially in your area where the temperatures have been much cooler, so that September becomes a key dry down month. So this puts us back to how does the Delta crop come off, and I had picked up some intelligence earlier this week that corn combines may be rolling down in the Delta either at the end of this week or the first of next week, and they're starting to, you know, fish around for some fields. So weather in the Delta, I think, will probably answer the question that you're talking about as far as whether quick ship bids come around and whether they stick around for a while. If there's poor weather in the Delta as far as harvest and not being able to get in the fields because of too much rain, that probably allows for quick ship bids to increase in likelihood for a longer period of time. But I think it's real important to take note, and we hit this on Commodity Week quite hard, is the idea that where you have above average production, if not record yielding production, be very careful not to, you know, run out of commercial space and move corn very quickly to your elevator because you're going to be first in, first out. And once that elevator fills up, in other words, in Champaign right now for Deese delivery, you've got like a 15-cent basis, 15-cent under basis. That basis could erode to 20 or 30 cents under if the crop is as big as it could be, or some people are suggesting it could be. And if it is that big, then the elevator is essentially going to say, I don't have the room for you. You have to store it on farm. I'm going to pay for that to a degree, so I'm going to push that basis out and force you to sell the carry, essentially, and keep it on farm. So in specific spots around the country where rail logistics are going to be an issue and or crop size is going to be big, I think we need to look past that fall basis and look at some of the winter months and see if that isn't appealing to lock in.
Let's look a little bit further out, and let me ask you, is it possible that the way corn plays itself out this year is that it breaks after the August or September reports another 25 to 40 cents, and then it just takes off out of the well after that on demand ideas?
Well, I think it's going to probably be more on supply ideas than demand, Dave. I do have, let me finish that last point first. I really think the September weather is going to be huge. If we go back into colder than normal weather in September, I think that will bring out some bullishness. And some of that bullishness will be supply. Some of that bullishness will be demand. We talked about, I think, this morning, that negative feedback loop by the end users. That would be an issue that would probably propose a positive feedback loop where concern and caution on the end user part would be more noteworthy. They'd want to get more extended coverage because of the September weather. I think it's really important from the longer-term perspective, depending on what USDA says next week and whether they give us just such an enormous corn carryover, the market just can't get up. I think the key is, again, that almost 90% of the increase from January to last month's world total grain ending stocks number is coming from coarse grains, i.e. corn. It's not the wheat. So any diminished supply in corn, especially if it was noteworthy, would actually bring even more support to the wheat, and then that in turn could bring more support to the corn. But it's really not been about the wheat as far as the big supply build. Wheat's only gone up about 4 million tons. It's the coarse grains that have gone up almost 26 million tons since January's report.
Why has wheat given back so much of its hard-earned gains this week?
I just don't think it's trading a risk premium based upon volatility or potential volatility, or it's pretty putting enough risk premium in the geopolitics of the equation. It continues to fight the idea that the European crop and the Black Sea crop is not necessarily going to be readily available if things get worse. It's just not willing to go down that path until it's staring them in the face. And so it's keeping us down at 2010 levels. Obviously, one reason for that is to encourage demand. And I think we are, except for this week's export sales, which were just horrendous, coming in at 66% below the four-week average for corn and 24% below the four-week average for wheat. I think we are encouraging demand at these prices.
Thank you much, Mike.
Have a great weekend.
Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics, and he is out of Atchison, Kansas.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In agricultural news, Argentina has asked the International Court of Justice to hear a lawsuit it wants to bring against the U.S. in a high-stakes legal battle between the South American nation and some of its creditors over unpaid debts. Argentina's petition says that decisions by U.S. courts in the dispute have violated its sovereignty. However, the U.S. would have to accept the International Court of Justice's jurisdiction for a lawsuit to move forward. The Obama administration is unlikely to grant the request in the absence of a bilateral treaty that would require the U.S. to accept the court as a venue to hear the disputes with Argentina. Argentina defaulted on some of its restructured debt July 30th after marathon talks with hedge funds suing to collect on bonds the country stopped paying in 2001 ended without a deal. The default could eventually affect almost $29 billion in Argentine debt. CME Group is surveying livestock market participants on shortening electronic trading hours. The outreach on trading hours comes on the heels of a proposal CME made in July to update its lean hog contracts. Currently, the livestock pit trades from 9:05 a.m. Central Time to 1 p.m. Central Time, but the electronic market trades nearly around the clock, except for a one-hour break in the afternoons. CME's survey will run through August 19th. CME's proposal includes three main changes: moving the contract expiration to the last business day of each month, computing the cash index from a 10-day average instead of a 2-day average, and adding new monthly contracts. China's exports surged in July on the back of strong demand from the U.S., Europe, and Southeast Asia, while imports fell, surprising markets on both counts and resulting in a record monthly trade surplus. Exports expanded 14.5% year over year. Imports, meanwhile, fell 1.6% during the same period. China's politically sensitive trade surplus widened to $47.3 billion in July from $31.6 billion in June. Meanwhile, China's July soybean imports rose to a record high 7.47 million tons for a single month. Exports from Argentina, the world's third largest exporter, were briefly disrupted in June because of a labor strike, and those shipments could have been sent in July, making last month's imports artificially higher than normal. But Capital Economics notes now that Chinese stocks of soybeans are at a 10-month high. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. The 2012 Census of Agriculture holds many unique facts. Researchers at the University of Illinois have been digging through the numbers to find some plums. Todd Gleason reports, it seems an old adage is borne out by the figures.
There were about 75,000 farms in Illinois, according to that census, when it was taken by the USDA. The census, by two different measures, acreage operated and value of production, suggests the majority of Illinois farms are small by either categorization. However, there are two interesting facts that flow with these categories. The smaller the farm, the more likely it is to produce livestock of less total value. And the larger the farm, the more likely it is to produce crops, mostly grain and oil seeds, of much greater value. Well, the Census of Agriculture defines a farm as any place from which $1,000 or more of agricultural products were produced and sold, or normally would have been sold, during the reference year, in this case 2012. The census classifies each farm's production specialization based on the North American Industry Classification System, or NAICS. A livestock farm is defined as any farm from which the majority of farm sales are from the production of beef cattle, feedlots, dairy, hog, poultry, sheep, or animal aquaculture. A vegetable, fruit, tree nut, or horticulture farm includes farms that primarily produce vegetables, melons, fruit, and tree nuts, greenhouse, nursery, or floriculture. And the final category, crop, includes oilseed, grain, tobacco, and other crops. Of Illinois' 75,087 farms, 77.3% could be classified as crop farms. However, more than 95% of the farms that span 1,000 acres or more are crop farms. In contrast, livestock farms account for 19.6% of all Illinois farms. While less than 5% of farms operating more than 1,000 acres are dedicated to livestock production, livestock farms account for 34.5% of Illinois' farms with fewer than 50 acres. For Illinois' smallest farms, those occupying fewer than 10 acres, 53.1% are livestock farms. Therefore, the majority of small farms are livestock farms. Another interesting observation that can be made with respect to the distribution of farm size is that while the majority of Illinois farms are small, large farms account for the majority of the total value of agricultural production. About half of Illinois farms span more than 100 acres. However, all of the farms with fewer than 100 acres produced only 6.6% of the state's $17.2 billion in agricultural products in 2012. A popular rule of thumb in business is the 80-20 rule that states roughly 80% of the effects come from 20% of the causes. For example, it is often suggested that in agriculture, 80% of the commodities are produced by only 20% of farms. The 2012 Census of Agriculture provides some evidence in support of that notion. In 2012, 20.4% of Illinois farms operated more than 500 acres. However, these farms produced 76.2% of the total value of production. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
It's National Frozen Custard Day. Made with eggs, cream, and sugar, frozen custard was a hit at the 1933 World's Fair in Chicago. By the 1940s, frozen custard could be found throughout much of the U.S. By the way, the Food and Drug Administration set standards for frozen custard in 2003. The dessert had to contain at least 1.12% of egg yolk solids by weight. On this day in agricultural history in 1828, Nicholas Louis Robert died, a French inventor. He designed the continuous papermaking machine. He made his first model in 1797. Paper was formed and carried on a moving belt of wire gauze. In 1899, A.T. Marshall of Brockton, Massachusetts, patented the refrigerator. But it would be many years before refrigerators became common in households. In 1973, Archibald Huntsman died, a Canadian marine ecologist. He was a pioneer on fisheries. While best known for his research on Atlantic salmon, he also studied the economies of fishing. And he developed methods of packing frozen fish fillets, which enabled many to sample Canada's ocean fish. And in 2005, the U.S. Energy Policy Act extended daylight savings time to begin 3 weeks earlier on the second Sunday of March and end a week later on the first Sunday of November. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. Cool weather has prevailed so far in August. The statewide average temperature for the month was 72 degrees, 2 degrees below average. Precipitation for August varies quite a bit around the state. If you draw a line across the state from the Quad Cities to Champaign, you could find large areas to the north of the line with amounts of between a tenth of an inch to an inch. To the south of that line, you would find more consistent rainfall totals of 1 to 3 inches, and even more in some spots. The bottom line is that the areas that were starting to look dry in July are now starting to receive widespread rains. The National Weather Service forecast for this weekend and next week indicate the mild weather will continue with highs in the upper 70s and low 80s in northern Illinois and in the low to mid 80s in central and southern Illinois. Lows will be in the low to mid 60s around the state. The only rain in the forecast for the next week is on Tuesday and only at 20 to 30% chance. And it looks like a great week for the Illinois State Fair. The temperature forecast beyond next week through August 21st shows cooler than average weather prevailing over Illinois and the central U.S. The southern third of Illinois has a chance of above average rainfall while the rest of the state is near average. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Here are the weekly settlements at the Chicago Board of Trade for the week ending August the 8th. September wheat had a high on the week of 572, a low of 534 and a quarter. September wheat ending the week at 549 and a quarter, up 15 from a week ago. July wheat had settled at 604, up 8 and one quarter from last week. September corn had a high on the week at 364, a low of 351 and a quarter. September corn ending the week at 351 and three quarters, down three quarters from last week. December corn settled at 363 and a half, up one and a quarter from a week ago. August soybeans had a high on the week of 1285, a low of 1210. August soybeans settling the week at 1284 and three quarters, up 69 and three quarters from last week. November soybeans settling at 1084 and three quarters, up 26 and a quarter from a week ago. August live cattle had a high of 158.90, a low of 152.55. August live cattle finishing the week on its low, down 4.75 from last week. August feeders finishing the week at 215.32 and a half, down 4.95 from a week ago. August lean hogs, a high of 118.30, a low of 114.15. August lean hogs finishing the week at 114.52 and a half, down 3.80 from last week. And September oats finishing the week at 357 and three quarters, and they were up 7 from last week. And that is today's closing market report. This is Dave Dickey.